Hello, the internet, and welcome to season 19, episode 1 of Der Daily Zeitgeist!
Yeah.
For February 20th, 2018, my name is Jack O'Brien, aka Watch Out Boy, She'll Chew You Up! Oh, O'Brien, she's a man-eater! Yeah!
That's right.
Those were my actual vocals. I did not.
No auto-tune.
There was no auto-tune. That was all real. That was courtesy of Jose Antonio Reyes. And I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray.
Come, my lady. Come, my lady. Oh, no. You're my butterfly. Sugar. Gravy.
Gravy sounds.
How I did that?
That's like some sort of skin disorder.
It is, but it's much milder form of scabies. And that comes from Chapman Rice.
As always.
A.K.A. God Chapman Rice. So
A.K.A.
thank you.
God Chapman Rice. God, and we're thrilled to be joined in our third seat by the very funny comedian, Dave Huntsberger.
Hello.
What's up, man?
Hey, thanks for them snaps.
Snapping all.
Hey, it's great to have you here. Dave, what's something from your search history that is revealing about who you are?
Very little. I don't do a ton of search, but I look up.
Because I know everything.
I know. I just don't look stuff. I don't know how I learn stuff, honestly.
Yeah. You have that podcast, Space Cave, where you just
Yeah, I ask
talk
directly.
To people and
yeah.
They tell you stuff.
Yeah, they tell me straight away, like if I have a question. Like,
your podcast is your search engine.
How do I change spark plugs?
I just call.
And
Pat
my
Boys.
Guest this week is my mechanic.
Yeah, I do feel weird when I Google search something because I don't do it that often. And then when I'm doing it, I'm like, I feel like this should be happening all the time. Usually it's how to spell a word or something. Like I didn't know how to spell tzatziki last night. And then so I looked that up because we were making some Greek food and then looked up some of the ingredients. So now I kind of know how to make tzatziki. I don't know what that says about me. But,
yeah. Well, famously, you will not eat anything you don't know how to spell. You've always said that.
I've always said that. Tattooed on my person.
Right. Yeah.
That's why we never go to Ethiopian.
I'm trying to think of a good search. Because, of course, there'll be some name or a figure that I don't know. And then I will type that. And I'm like, who the hell is this? But I can't think of a good one recently.
Yeah.
But tzatziki, you like to cook?
No, not particularly.
Okay.
So. But
all right. Well, we solved that.
What is something you think is underrated?
Oh, the show Detectorists.
Detectorists.
Oh, yeah, the English one
mm-hmm.
with Gareth from the Office.
Yeah.
I started watching that, yeah.
Yeah, he's great. He wrote and, like, directs the show. It's real. I bet the scripts are 8 pages long. And it's just a lot of, like, establishing shots, and it's just real slow-paced. And that as a whole is very underrated, like, calmness and just understanding things, being – it's still funny. It's still great. It's really, like – I think that's why I like the British Bake Off.
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Like, oh, this makes
it's me soothing.
Feel. Yeah.
I mean, it's funny because it's still a comedy, but it still has that sort of great British Bake Off like energy where you're just kind of like, ooh, like I'm laughing and I'm also being like lulled into a comfortable place.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm.
So that I feel like is underrated.
Have you ever watched slow TV? Like they just put a camera on a boat and like it goes across a channel for like 8 hours uncut. That's like the heroin, the uncut of,
ooh.
I guess, what
that,
the British...
raw uncut.
Yeah, yeah. It's just like, but it's good to have on in the background.
I've seen the one where you take a train ride.
Yeah, the train ride's really nice because the sound of trains.
Where do you find slow TV?
It's on
There's a bunch on
Apple
Netflix,
TV,
and
on
I
Netflix,
think Amazon has versions. Because it's like a huge, it's like a Scandinavian thing, right?
Right. Yeah, they did it 1 year in Scandinavia. It was like the highest rated thing they've ever had. It was like their Super Bowl.
Like, all right, we've
finally
written boom. We've written a bunch of shows. What do you think of this? I'd rather just watch the boat.
Yeah,
yeah.
That
it's
sucks.
Pretty cool though, because by the end of the boat ride, I think it's like 9 hours long, and people are like coming out and like waving to the camera because they were watching it and like,
like
were
no,
aware.
I'm on
They're
it.
Like, oh no, it's gonna come by our house. What's something you think is overrated?
I think. I like to look at the Twitter moments. Like, what is the population at large saying about this? And the guy running down the escalator and falling. Have you seen that one?
I haven't.
People will be like, here's Kevin Durant getting out of whatever arena. And then it just shows a dude like flying down an escalator. Or the hold my beer line. Or the kind of Mormon-looking blonde dude who does those weird blinks.
Mm-hmm. Just sort of reaction gifs?
Reaction gifs drive me insane because anytime I'm like scrolling through, I'll be like, oh, there's like 8 of these posted. All of them will have like 500 likes or retweets.
Right.
Whereas
right.
I feel like they deserve 0. It's so unoriginal.
Yeah, people rely on the same 6 reaction gifs right now.
It's unbelievable. Like, so-and-so says this, the next person, hold my beer. I'm like, yeah, that's been done to death. And I'll look and I'll have an insane amount of reaction to it. And I just feel like, I hope their house blows up. I just can't stand that this person.
It's these kids, man, you know. That internet talk is taking over. We don't even speak in real words anymore. We communicate in reaction gifs.
Yeah.
But I guess, yeah, you haven't seen the one with the escalator? This dude is sliding down you're talking about the one who he's sliding down between escalators and epically destroys his nether regions.
No, I'm talking, this guy is like.
Oh. Yeah, I've seen that one.
People are going up the escalator. There's 2. It looks like it's in a stadium of some sort.
Uh-huh.
People are coming down on one side. They're going up on the other. And he just comes barreling down like he's fleeing from someone that's shooting at him or something.
Shit.
And I think he's got like a sweatshirt or some sort of jacket like tagging along, like dragging behind him. And he jumps, he lands the first step, and then he just kind of tumbles down and plows through a bunch of people. And so it really captures that whole people leaving a scene in sort of the most like dramatic and unhealthy way possible. The other one I just thought of is Vince McMahon walking into places. They go, so-and-so walking into their contract negotiations, like,
right.
And they post that, and I want their house to blow up also.
How do you choose to communicate?
Not at all.
So are you anti? Yeah.
I'm off the grid. I'm out there just living a quiet life.
Internalizing everything.
Just found out about these reaction gifts.
Google has your picture on a thing. They're like, we have to figure out the last man in America.
Because everyone, I mean, it's such a natural human thing. We want our perspective, our point of view to matter, to share it.
Right.
When you look at those moments, man, and you realize there's like 8 reactions to anything that people share.
Right.
So when anyone's like stands out to you, you go, oh, that's a unique take. Otherwise, we're just like fish being sprinkled food in. And then the ones that feel like they're the most important go right up to the top and they eat the food and share those stupid gifts. And I just can't stand it.
A great joke account would just be to have an account that uses the same reaction gif to just react to like many of the top tweets of the day.
Yeah.
Right.
And just always do that. Just make that thing.
Well, I like those things, David. So now I'm going to take you to task.
All right. That's fair.
No, we are the Twitter moments of podcasts, though. So
we are one big reaction gif turned into a show.
But all right, so basically, we're trying to take a sample of what people are thinking and talking about right now. And the way we like to open up is by asking our guest, "What is a myth? What's something that people believe to be true that you, in your personal experience, know to be false?"
Oh, I could tell you a few ones that are fake, that are lies. That I thought I was just looking at this magazine that has Brad Pitt's name on it. It's William Bradley Pitt.
And
I thought, like, people think he changed his name to Brad because of like reverence for his grandfather or something. But I think he was named Will Pitt, and then the Devo song got to be too much. He was getting made fun of, changed it to Brad. That's
Will
dumb.
Pitt good.
That's not a real myth. The second one, this one is, I think this is like just a common misconception. People say assless chaps, and growing up around like the ranching world.
Right, you were a cowboy.
Yeah, it's chaps to begin with.
Really?
Yeah. And so
really?
People, yeah,
no,
yeah,
you're just trying to get people beat up when they go to the
fucking... If you go behind the chutes at a rodeo and you say, cool chaps, you'll
I'm
be...
fuck you up.
People just start pouring beer on you. But you could be dressed however, and if you just said like, I like those chaps, no one would even blink an eye.
Nice.
Really?
Yeah. They would just go, hey, thanks, man. But the nature of chaps is that it is impossible for them to contain an ass.
Right.
Then
because
it's just leather
just
pants.
Go over the legs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that is an annoying one where people go, put on some assless chaps.
Redundant, in a way.
Yeah. It's redundant. Yeah. It's a double redundancy. Here's a real thing that I don't know that necessarily a myth, but I think scientifically we, again, have misconceptions about it. When women are pregnant and they have all those weird food cravings,
yes,
there's a tendency to be like, oh, yeah, pregnancy, all those hormones.
Right.
But really what's happening, and this happens in all mammals when they are pregnant, is the olfactory sense, your ability to smell your offspring, is connected to a certain grouping of neurons. And your brain goes through this neural regenesis where all of those cells are brand new. But in the process of building them, it's sort of like the construction workers kind of mess up the plans a little bit.
Uh-huh.
So as it's happening, you're getting all these weird signals. So women are like, I want ice cream, now pickles, now coffee grounds, and
right.
all this weird. So it's less about hormones. It's more that the olfactory
have,
sense.
Like, super senses. My wife is, we're giving birth in 6 days. She's
nice.
Giving birth. I'm not doing anything other than,
congratulations,
you know, trying not
you guys.
To faint. But she
get the fainting couch ready.
Like her sense of smell is so like extra sensitive right now that it's like problematic. She's just like, I can't deal with this. Like when we're driving, she usually gets car sick, but now especially so, just because like we'll drive past something that smells bad. It's like, it is like a super powered sense.
She has a brand new set of cells that are connected to her ability to smell.
Yeah.
And cells for smell, her smell cells are brand new. And I think that makes sense. Like in an earlier time when you'd have to smell your offspring or smell like if they had maybe an infection or something, you theoretically could be like, oh, something's wrong here.
Yeah.
So that's what's going on there. That is, I don't know if that's a myth necessarily, but.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
I don't know anything about this stuff.
Yeah.
So.
I think there's also a thing where there's a certain point, whether it's, I don't know if it's when they're pregnant or when they're ovulating or when they're menstruating, but at some point in women's reproductive cycle, they are extra good at spotting snakes. Like when they can just, yeah.
Hi, welcome to our new show, Men Talking About Women's Reproductive Cycles.
Well, but it's really weird because I must have been like, that's ovulating or menstruating at some point, because I went hiking in Malibu with my wife and like a couple other friends. And I was just able to spot these rattlesnakes like out of nowhere. They were like, wait, how did you see that? I swear to God, it was the weirdest thing. I like suddenly had the super ability to spot rattlesnakes.
But I thought you said this is a thing for women.
It is, but like I...
You're saying by osmosis,
randomly
you
had
you
it one
up?
Day. No,
you
I'm
can't.
Just
you can't ask, especially a stranger, but even like, you know, someone comes over to your house and looks as if they might be with child. You can never ask.
Right.
But now maybe you could say, are you seeing snakes?
Snake test.
Yeah, exactly. all right. That's. I now sound completely
crazy.
You
could send out like a birth announcement. Right. Say, she's seeing snakes.
The lady is seeing snakes. all right. That's actually how movies should reveal that someone's pregnant instead of like throwing up like they do now. Yeah.
What was that?
Every time a woman throws up in a movie
are those videos
or touches her stomach,
I
it means she's pregnant.
The videos where like grandparents find out they're going to be grandparents and like, oh my God, we're gonna be grandparents. But this time it's just like sunglasses with snakes on the lenses. It's like, she's seeing snakes.
All right, let's get into the stories of the moment. We are coming off of the long weekend, the Black Panther weekend, as we're referring to it, as opposed to President's Day weekend. I did not spend my day in reflection of the presidency because that would have caused me to, you know, have heart palpitations. Instead, I saw Black Panther, as did a lot of the country. It is currently the third, has had the third all-time biggest opening just in the history of movies. This is weird because it's a February weekend.
Yeah.
I like, based on that, you can tell that Disney and Marvel did not see it coming because people don't put their monster movies in February. February is supposed to be sort of a dead zone. It beat the previous record for biggest domestic box office opening in February by $69 million. That was Deadpool last year, which, you know, they didn't think was going to be as big a hit as it was. But apparently they didn't see Black Panther being quite this big because it is a monster. And Breitbart is pissed, you guys.
What?
Actually, they're not pissed. So they're, I think they're trolling people. They wrote a relatively glowing review of the movie in which they claimed that T'Challa, the Black Panther.
T'Challa. Excuse you, my man.
They claim that he is representing Trump and that like everything about his worldview is, you know, maps to the MAGA movement. And then Killmonger. Did I pronounce that correctly? Killmonger?
Yes.
Killmonger. He is the Black Lives Matter movement.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it's just kind of...
Wait, so how do they say that T'Challa is anything like Trump? Like, what is the logic?
Let's not get too much into the plot because I went to see it and it was sold out.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we ended up seeing Call Me By Your Name.
Very different films. Yes, very different. Would you like some apricots?
Right.
You mean kumquats. Guys, what's going on?
Kumquats.
He's checked in. Welcome to Toxic Masculinity.
Right.
Yeah, okay, no, without spoilers.
Because of the protectionism and like nationalism.
Oh, because he's like about Wakanda, that they're like, right. Trump is about America.
Apparently they only watched the first half because right. like, that's only his point of view. Like, he goes through a change as a character and goes from this point of view they're ascribing to him to the opposite point of view of that they're saying the bad guy has and represents the Black Lives Matter movement. It's a desperate attempt to sort of insinuate themselves into this cultural moment.
Right.
The other way that, you know, people who are anti-progress are trying to insinuate themselves into the movie is claiming the movie is racist. There were fake reports that white people were being assaulted at screenings of Black Panther that we talked about on Friday. Got completely debunked. But yeah, it's just it's embarrassing. You have to be sort of embarrassed for them because they haven't had, you know, they had a big cultural moment when Trump was elected, but that's not a long-lasting cultural contribution. Like, they really haven't had a lasting pop culture contribution since Birth of a Nation, I guess. It's been a while for them.
Yeah, I know. If you're one of their big supporters right now and you only admire artists who also like subscribe to that, it's Kid Rock and Ted Nugent.
Right?
It's such a terrible catalog.
So it's not the party you want to go to.
Right.
No. Which makes sense why you troll it, because I would be salty too.
Those
are like, you know, I got a cape for these people and I have to somehow find a way to bring people's joy down about Black Panther. Look, man, it's doing very well. It's got great critical reviews. And I think, you know, people just need to let us have that, you know, because people weren't out there picketing for fucking Harry Potter.
Right.
You know what I mean? Or trying to say this or that. I mean, like, look, this
society. Actually, they were religious.
Religious people thought it was black magic. And
From a strictly racial standpoint, right? Like, mm-hmm. where people say, oh, it's racist. I mean, it's racist for other reasons. But yes, again, you know, just let us have this. You know what I mean? We'll go back to regularly scheduled programming where white people will dominate everything. But
maybe this is like everyone gets to have everything, and there is always this small group that hates whatever. There are probably people that hated the Batmans, probably people that hated, you know, anything that's huge like this. They hated Deadpool because of whatever.
Well, there are even black people who are even saying this movie is not black enough, or saying that it's problematic because they're like, you know, for
African-Americans playing that, Africans.
Yeah, or even people trying to like, I know there were like African people trying to throw shade at African-Americans for wearing like dashikis and things like that and just saying like, don't play dress up if, you know, what are you going to do after this movie comes out?
Yeah.
Like how about it are you after that?
We certainly live in an age where it is virtually impossible now for something to just skate through and everyone go, yep, that was good. There's
right.
for sure going to be some sort of, but everything's
right.
sparking outrage. Yeah. Everything creating outrage.
There are no modern day The Fugitives where people are just like, yeah, yep. that was fun. All right. And moving on.
Right.
We just can't have a The Fugitive these days.
I think if there was a cool white guy to go along with him, then they would have been like, okay, cool. But I think because it was so...
Because it was Tim from The Office?
Yeah, right.
Or with The Fugitive, I mean, when he bails out off the dam, there was probably a number of... There was probably forums dedicated to it, and there certainly was a blog that was like, the force of that water, and here's the... He would have...
Of course, yeah, right.
But it just didn't get the exposure it does now.
Yeah, and I think maybe that's even wrong to even say that there is that much outrage, because if you really think about it, if you just distill this whole weekend down to one thing, it's just how great Black Panther was.
Right. Mm-hmm.
All this other stuff really is not... doing much to affect people's realities, but
yeah, no, for sure, it's definitely just a glorious cultural moment for a lot of people, and we shouldn't let that distract us. There's also been really great pieces, like you were talking about the controversy with African people. Like, in addition to the really great reviews of the movie, there's been a lot of really good think pieces written about it, like, which is, you know, a lot of modern culture is like, you know, the hot take machine coming. And this is actually, you know, people are writing really interesting articles that people should check out. Like Jelani Cobb from The New Yorker wrote an interesting article about how this movie sort of exists on the hyphen between African and American, and sort of that the relationship between those two things that I hadn't really heard people talk that much about. It was really interesting.
Well, I think one thing, you know, for being African American, like, we don't have a idea of what African culture we truly have because of the slave trade, you know, like, so this sort of nebulous, sort of abstract idea of Africa and Wakanda is very easy to get behind, because it's not like people are over here, like, I can say, oh, I'm Nigerian or I'm Ghanaian or whatever.
Right.
But Wakanda sort of offers this sort of more nebulous idea of it that it's very easy to grasp onto, where it's magical, because I think already a lot of people, especially me, like, growing up, I had a very bizarre understanding of Africa to, like, had gone there. But this sort of, I don't know, I really enjoy how much excitement that it's giving people, especially to sort of look back and, like, okay, there is this connection to Africa. Sure, Wakanda isn't technically it because it's fake, but at the very least, it's having people sort of re-engage with the idea of having an identity that's sort of separate from just being African-American, and understanding that, you know, we all came from Africa at some point.
Yeah, that's kind of what Jelani Cobb ends up writing about, how, you know, yes, Wakanda is fake, but so is the version of Africa that we've been getting in Western literature for years, of, like, the, quote, dark continent, where it's, like, completely without history.
Right.
And so they're reclaiming, you know, Ryan Coogler and the filmmakers are reclaiming Africa and African history by creating, like, a counter-narrative that's, yes, fictional, but it's just as fictional as the one that has been ascribed to Africa.
Yeah, so everybody, like, you know, if you really liked Black Panther and you're all about Africa, hey, go to the real thing, because let me tell you, man, you got inspired by that movie. There was nothing more eye-opening than actually going to Africa for me. So
my mom is from Sioux City, which is born in Sioux City, Iowa, and there is a Lake Wakanda there. And I'd also recommend going and checking that out.
Yeah.
It's Iowa. It's a little different.
I think there is also a country club in Ohio or something that people were getting, like, were, like, spamming them with phone calls because it was like Wakanda Country Club.
Oh, really?
Yeah. There are a few Wakandas. So spelling is slightly different, but Wakanda does exist.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, just two of my favorite bits of all time, Fergie's National Anthem and the skier who gamed the Olympics. And we're back. So, NBA All-Star game was this weekend.
Yeah. How'd you like the game?
I actually didn't watch the game because
you're about to be
during,
dead.
It was not during one of our TV breaks.
You changed,
We did watch the dunk contest the night before with my son, and we set up his little like Nerf hoop next to the basket, and he was, like, so into it. Like, ball is one of his favorite words
ball
right now.
Ball is life.
Yeah, and he was just, like, I was picking him up and doing crazy dunks.
Did he have, like,
him.
Swag? Was he rocking the cradle and, like, windmilling? Shit.
No, he wasn't.
I'm like, we got to sign him. No, I really liked the dunk. Just shout out to Larry Nance Jr. for respecting his father, who had an epic slam dunk contest against Michael Jordan. Yeah. So seeing him do the same sort of rock in the cradle, side windmill dunk.
Have you ever tried that dunk? Like, did you ever, like, lower a hoop?
All the time.
It was my whole life as a kid was finding hoop. We'd sneak into playgrounds where they had the low, like, little kid hoops. And then any friend of mine that had, like, oh, my God, you can put a broomstick up there and, like, lower the hoop down.
Yeah.
And that is the hardest dunk.
The rocking the cradle.
To be up in the air and pull it back and then around like
it's
that.
It's a reverse windmill.
Well, and also, like, so we used to do that. We call it slam ball, where you bring the hoops down about 7 or 8 feet and just everyone's dunking on each other.
Right.
It's, like, the greatest pastime of freshman year of high school.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think the only time to do anything like that, it had to be, like, one of those small balls, like, inevitably, like, a Notre Dame ball that you won at a carnival for making a bunch of free throws. Yeah.
Notre Dame. They were all Notre Dame.
Yeah, they were Notre Dame or Michigan were the only two printed basketballs you could get back then.
Blue and yellow. So that was really cool. Donovan Mitchell won. He's the rookie. People are saying he should be the rookie of the year, but obviously it should be Ben Simmons. One of my favorite dunks was by the dude who didn't even make it out of the top four, Dennis Smith Jr. from
Dallas.
Mm-hmm. He did, like, sort of a reverse 360 that it took him, like, three times to get right, but it was pretty awesome. It was, like, unlike anything I'd seen before. But anyways, we got to the game, and I missed the game. I still have it recorded. I probably won't watch it.
You didn't have to tell her. That's aggressive.
I don't care, NBA. Okay. Nice try. But Fergie opened things up with a rendition of the national anthem. We're going to listen to a little snippet of it. But it was, in my opinion, inspired, but a lot of people had problem with it.
Hmm.
That our flag was still there. Oh, say, does that star
Here's the big part. Take him home, Fergie. This is when everyone's laughing.
Yeah, this is when they're like showing all the players and they're just like can't keep a straight face.
I when I was a kid, that was what I associated with being the national anthem is tons of extra notes.
Right.
The Simpsons did an episode once where like a person starts singing and there's like a time lapse and by the end of the song, everyone's asleep.
Yeah.
I feel like that was what the old controversies used to be. You're like, just get through the song. Remember right. You had a showcase, just sing the damn song.
Right. I think the point this time is she added like sort of a jazzy vibe that was like, and you know, some sexiness where she was making love to the camera and the microphone and the flag and just American history.
Yeah,
in
but
general.
You got to be able to sing.
She sings just, fine.
It was pitchy for me. For me, dog. Hey, dog. For me,
it's a no.
That was a little pitchy, dog. I don't know. The melisma could have done without that too. It was a very melismatic performance, especially when you went I mean, yes. I think it's commendable that you're trying something, right? And I'm all for your artistic license, and I don't really begrudge her for trying that.
Yeah.
But you also got to know the NBA is one of the most active leagues in terms of social media. So
right.
Like,
you're
when
gonna
you're,
get
you're, you don't take risks there because guy. I mean, we will come after you. And collectively, Twitter, I can't even the amount of memes that happened within 15 minutes of her ending the national anthem was mind blowing.
Yeah.
But yes, I think you know, good for her.
Yes.
But it was fucking terrible. And
you're going to have this intersection of reverence for the Department of Defense and this
right.
seriousness of thinking. But then you're also going to bring in art, which
right.
has a large spectrum of subjectivity.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's going to be a risky run. You might as
yeah.
well just play the same recording over and over if you want it
well,
to be
yeah.
sterile.
Right.
I think she just sort of went out of her wheelhouse in terms of like a vocalist. She doesn't sing in that
She's
style
not a
often.
Jazzy
yeah.
lounge singer type.
Because even like Whitney, when she did one of the most iconic versions of
right.
it, she just played to her strength
right.
and just blew it
she,
out with
I
her
would
voice.
Always love I will always love you. Dude.
Yes,
yeah.
yes, yes.
People
yes, yes.
really shit on the Marvin Gaye one, but now people look back on that like that's one of the best ever.
And I think yeah. we're going to do the same with this. So moving on.
you're going to be telling your yet-to-be-born child about, I remember you were just about to be born and Fergie changed America.
The memes. I mean, it did bring America
together. She changed
together.
The course
like,
of a nation.
Everybody, like, try and imagine another news story that can bring America together about the national anthem. Like, that has not been possible for
That's
at least
true.
A year. So, right on, Fergie. It was great, like, the player reactions. Everybody was, like, doing an okay job holding it together.
In.
And then she had that last run where she broke Banner Yet Wave into, like, 13 syllables and... Draymond Green just
yeah.
like lost it.
No one didn't laugh inappropriate.
Right.
I mean, Jimmy
yeah.
Kimmel almost looked like there was a camera on him, and you could almost tell he was like, "Yo, don't put me on camera, you assholes, because you're looking at me to laugh." Chance the Rapper had to put his head down
right.
and laugh to himself. So, I mean, that's not a good look when other musicians are laughing at that. You know
but
what I mean?
I also think they were kind of enjoying the fact that she was clearly going for it. You know, there was like a.
So what do you mean by going for it? That just taking a
she
risk
had a
that
take,
did, that,
she
that
had a,
horribly backfired.
She had an artistic vision.
Okay.
And
which
she
is,
executed it extremely confidently. She when she finished that and said, "Let's play basketball," she was like, "A plus, killed it. Yes,
yeah.
You can send the flowers to my dressing room."
That's how she should feel. And the fact that she apologized is such horse shit.
I know. Art. Yeah, she shouldn't apologize. She's not
And apologize. Her apology made me feel sorry for her because it was like, sorry, I tried my best.
No,
sorry,
yeah, she
Dad.
Said, I've always been honored and proud to perform the national anthem. And last night, I wanted to try something special for the NBA. I'm a risk taker artistically, but clearly this rendition didn't strike the intended tone. I love this country and honestly tried my best.
Yeah.
Good for you, Fergie.
Yeah.
You know, that's all we can ask.
Yeah.
See, that's why I'm like.
And she acknowledged straight up right there. She was like, clearly, this didn't work.
Yeah.
I thought it worked. It did not.
Like, yeah.
If it was looked at as she didn't respect the national anthem, which it, then the players went out and respected the hell out of the game. They played full tilt
right.
as hard as they could. It's a silly game. It's a fun, silly thing.
Right.
I think it's just the great American pastime, though, is micro analysis of people's national anthem singers.
Moments where everybody knows people are watching.
You have to put an event together and you have to choose kid, established singer, instrumentalist.
Right.
Who you go with.
Right.
Right.
Or
yeah, yeah.
or like someone with a really heroic backstory.
Right.
Speaking of micro moments that everybody analyzed, this isn't on our outline, but I'm just
curious.
Doing
some jazz right now?
Because I'm just doing some Jack jazz. So is Katie Couric not on the Winter Olympics because of that one Netherlands thing she said about them ice skating? It's all Mike Tirico all the time. I haven't seen her since the opening ceremonies. And like that was a big story in the lead up that she was going instead of Megyn Kelly. Megyn Kelly wasn't getting to go. And then they've just given us Mike Tirico the whole time. And everybody I asked, they're like, oh, yeah, she said that thing about the Netherlands. That didn't seem like that big a deal.
Oh,
like,
well,
I don't even know what she said.
She said that the people in Amsterdam, the canals freeze over and they ice skate to work on them. And that's why they're good at speed skating, which is just like not true. And like everyone's like, that's dumb.
And there were a few Dutch listeners who point out that, yes, you can skate places. So we're not saying that was impossible. But pointing to that as the only reason why the Dutch are good at speed skating is fucking wildly
but
inaccurate.
But it seems like it's just a thing where everybody was watching the opening ceremonies. That's like the one thing from the Olympics everybody watches. And she said a stupid thing. And because things get like overanalyzed so much, that might be what's keeping her off the Olympics.
Well, it's interesting because when I just searched Katie Couric Olympics, the last story was her apologizing for her implication.
And they were just like, now get the fuck out.
So I guess maybe what they did was the subtle thing where it's like, okay, you're going to apologize, and we're going to shadow fire you.
Right.
And so we're not going to announce that you're gone. But it's people like you who notice now, like, oh, where'd Katie Couric? Because I didn't even notice, because I'm watching mostly, like, on the app where I'm just watching the events.
I want Bob Costas's pink eye back.
Yeah.
Oh, that was beautiful.
No,
that
Mike Tirico. It's just a strange – like, Mike Tirico is not a household name, but he is their, like, anchor. He is who they go back to every
time. They paid him a ton of money to get him away from ESPN.
Yeah.
So they got to use him.
And they have Fred Rogan from the local NBC affiliate in L.A., our sports guy.
Yeah.
He's doing the national coverage, too. So it seems like they were skimming – for a lot of whoever, not to
maybe
say
they
that
just saw the ratings were kind of lower than they expected and like cut their losses early.
Maybe. I mean, considering like the guy who did the Koreans can look up to Japanese people comment was just a dude who was in meetings that they're like, hey, man, you want to go on air? So I don't know if
that's
thing
you
a lot
said
about
was pretty
business.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Damn, you panic read a Wikipedia article before this meeting?
Right. All right. So we also want to talk about the Winter Olympics from the point of view of the skier. Who gamed the system?
She
gamed it.
Earned her spot on the Olympic stage to do what is either my favorite bit ever or like a just display of mental illness. We're not totally sure.
If any of us in here had done that, we would still be laughing.
Yes.
You know, that's the greatest thing.
Right.
She tried to Kickstarter or GoFundMe, it got $0 to pay for her ability to go around the world because you have to qualify in a number of things in the top 30.
Yeah,
right.
She did that just by sometimes just riding down, never trying a trick, and some other girls would fall.
Right.
Sometimes there wouldn't even be 30 competitors.
There's never been 30 competitors.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The most she was ever in, there were 28 people. So by default, if she just makes it without falling, you are placing. So just to touch on this, we're talking about Elizabeth Sweeney,
right,
who is an American who was competing for Hungary in the skiing halfpipe event. And yes, she went down so unenergetically. I've never seen someone drop into a halfpipe with less
It's amazing.
With less life.
And she fist bumps her coach and kind of pumps up, like, here we go. And then snow plows down a ways and gently dives into it and just rides it like she's going
it
on
looked
a
like
saucer.
Anyone,
like it's a ride.
Yeah, or like anyone who is in this room who may be proficient as a skier, but it's like, yo, I'm not fucking around that half pipe. Right. I'm like, I'll go, but I'm going to do my version.
Yeah.
That's what she did. And yeah, then people say, well, how did she get in there? So the rules are, to get in, you have to compete in regularly compete in these World Cup half pipe events and be in and consistently placed in the top 30. So she found out there's never even 30 people competing. So by default, I will always be in the top 30.
If I just finish,
because then if you don't fall, you don't get any deductions.
Then. Right.
You can at least maintain a score where if someone who falls, they're fucked, and you can still kind of get to that point. And she apparently was competing for Venezuela before she switched to Hungary like 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So she ran for governor against Arnold Schwarzenegger long ago.
Yeah.
Did she? Yeah. She's a megalomaniac. She's a psychopath.
Oh, she did?
She legitimately did. She is going to be the next like sort of Gone Girl crazy story.
Right.
And I think you just – not because she did this, but at the end, like we were talking about before on air, when she waves at the camera –
right. Yeah.
That's such a psychotic move.
Yep, I did it.
Yeah. Hey, everybody.
And a lot of people are like, this is inspiring. And to me, I know I was saying this before, is like, she's the Dunning-Kruger effect personified on the other side where you greatly overestimate your own ability.
What is the Dunning-Kruger effect?
That's where people who have a certain – it happens to creative people and uncreative people. It's like the SoundCloud rapper effect is what I like to call it. Is some people have innate skill – but they actually – it's sort of like imposter syndrome where they believe, oh, I'm not good at this.
Right.
And they sort of retreat into themselves and they might not try as many things because they don't actually believe in the innate talent that they have. The other side of that coin is people who think that their ability is much more than it is, and it gives them like this sort of unstoppable resolve to keep doing whatever it is that they're doing despite what anyone says. Because
what's it called again?
The Dunning-Kruger effect.
That's so right on. That's everything. That's all
it's
society.
Intelligence.
Now.
It's really everything.
Just so I don't get flamed by all the psychology experts out there, I'll just read the definition so you can be claro on this. So it's a cognitive bias wherein people of low ability suffer from illusory superiority, mistakenly assessing their cognitive ability as greater than it is.
Right. They know so little, they don't know enough to realize they're terrible.
It's beautiful.
And then people who are actually good at the thing or know a lot about like the sport or the...
you see it all
academic
the time in music.
Focus or
people
music.
You've listened to everything, you know, the history of music, and you're so uncertain of like, how do I do anything that's original? Then they just never do it.
Yeah.
Right.
Someone else has never played, never listened to music, just get up there and be like, this is good, right?
Yeah.
I'm the best. This is amazing.
And I'm sure with people going like, oh my God, you're great. That's
right.
You're encouraged to mediocrity.
Yeah.
What were her phone calls like after she went to Venezuela and just managed to stay on her feet? Like, hey, sweetie, how'd it go? Like, well, two girls crashed, so I got 13th out of 15.
Yep.
Right. That's, hey, way to go.
Nice.
All right, honey. Great.
But yeah, so all of her quotes afterwards were like, yeah, I just want to be an inspiration for people in South and Central America. Which is weird because
you
she's
too
from the
can
United
work
States.
Your ass off to get out there and be dead last at
thank
anything.
Thank you,
you
white savior.
Right. So I guess it's just mental illness or, yeah. But
she could be doing a bit, like you like to think. That
I
want to
believe
a
it's a bit, and she's just as good as Stephen Colbert at, like, not breaking. Like, she just has been able to not break and say the perfectly insane thing at every moment.
Right.
That's the reality I choose to exist in.
Right.
If there's a documentary and this is like the next Borat, I'm into it.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Because her checking into every – she had to see some familiar faces of people like, you're here again?
Right.
What the fuck? I trained my whole goddamn life. You placed last of the last thing I saw you, and now you're sitting next to me at the Olympics?
Right.
You've never even peeked out of the top of the pipe. Your skis do not leave the snow.
Yeah. People, if you haven't seen it, like, you really need to go watch it right now because she's just the right amount of perfectly mediocre at skiing that – like, it's perfect. It wouldn't be as funny if she was any worse or any better at skiing, but
when
she's
she does,
just the right amount.
She does that little 180.
Yeah,
at
the very end.
So
it's
good.
So perfect.
Yeah. I guess when you couple all of this, like, it is hard to see this as a bit because it sounds like you had the audacity to ask for a Kickstarter.
Right.
After you finished that qualifying run and said you were really disappointed you didn't get into the final, I'm sorry, how?
Right.
And then also, like, there are a lot of people who are like, oh, this is inspiration. But a lot of the people are really pissed, especially other Olympians who won't comment until after the Olympics because they don't want to like drag her down publicly while they're competing because there are people who really take this seriously.
Right.
And clearly she's found a loophole. just to make it there.
The best, though, is the announcers are incapable of referencing right. how they, silly it is.
Yeah.
So they're, well, she's taking it a little bit steady here, and she's going to be a little conservative. Right. They never crack. They, yeah. Ooh, showing the judges there, she's got a little bit of style to
right.
her.
Wow, so she can stand upright?
And then the reaction shot of the South Korean fans who are just like, their hands are poised pre-clap, like because they've clapped for everybody who's yeah. finished, but they like can't, they don't know quite yet if they should or like what they've just witnessed.
Well, and it's crazy too because it has all visually, it follows all the tropes of like an Olympic downhill event where then they come down triumphantly at the end, stop towards like the signage and right. then wait for their score.
Right.
And you just saw that and you're like, bruh, ain't no fucking score gonna, so why, there's not even that moment where you're like, oh, what's gonna happen? You're like, that right. was bullshit. And she's still like, all right, that was right. all right. That was something else.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
If it is a bit, she's a genius. And most people have probably seen it by now. There's a companion video that Miles found that is her training video. That's like a montage of her doing like, she's like ice skating or roller skating and trying to do tricks.
Yeah.
But it's like watching a 5-year-old who like just learned to skate kind
Yo,
of.
Anyone can make the training video. Just put your iPhone on slow motion video mode.
Right.
And just rollerblade and do a 180. But when you do the move, slow that down as if you're doing a fucking trick.
Right.
And then just do that with some like powerful EDM music.
Right.
And it's also, awesome. When you look at the cover photo of the training video, like maybe she does kind of have that, the crazy eyes.
Yeah, she's yeah, yeah. a psychopath.
Yeah. yeah. So that, so
she went to Berkeley and Harvard. So she's like a.
She's an overachiever.
Extreme, yeah, an overachiever and probably like very privileged. And yeah, so. It's interesting.
So
we'll
your diagnosis, psychopath.
100%. Just from
Jack,
the wave. Just from
comedic
the wave.
Genius.
Comedic genius. Okay, so Jack, comedic genius. David, psychopath. I'm going to go with, yeah, psychopath. Or at the very least, immoral human who's just trying to feel good.
Those
and go
two
to the
things aren't incompatible either. Right. I mean, she could be
a psychotic comedic genius.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Ah, only time will tell.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We just took up the whole second chunk with Fergie and the skier, but I have no regrets about that. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. And we're back. And we wanted to talk about the story that our wonderful writer, Jam McNabb, shout out to Jam, who is a new father.
Mm-hmm. Shout out to all the young Canadian fathers out
all
there.
All the young Canadian fathers. He brought this story to our attention last week.
Yeah, and I'm glad he did.
So I knew that there are gangs in mm-hmm. Disneyland.
Yep.
So like basically there are these people who go to Disneyland like almost every day. And they started like noticing each other and they formed gangs. And, you know, it seemed like sort of – I had read articles about them where it was kind of – they had to imply all the similarities. Like they wear leather vests and they were like just like bikers.
Yeah.
But it seemed like they
in,
were –
You patched in, man. You patched in.
Right. It seemed like they were trying a little too hard to, you know, make them sound menacing.
Yeah, because let's be real. These are not gangs, Jack. These are social clubs.
Right.
With gang clothes.
Is there an inherent like silliness involved? It's got to be.
Well,
it's got to be tongue-in-cheek
gang warfare,
right?
Let's think of some of the names, like the Tigger Army.
Right.
Or what's the other one?
The White Rabbits are
oh,
the
yeah, White
people
Rabbits.
Who are now being sued.
And
by...
Neverland Mermaids.
So the guy filing the lawsuit is the, quote, president and battalion chief of the fictional fire station in Disneyland. Like on Main Street, when you walk into Disneyland, there's like a fire station. He claims to be the battalion chief of that fire station.
You're talking about MSFS 55.
Right.
Main Street Fire Station 55.
55 Social Club. That's a totally made up
position. If you had to bet $1 million one way or the other, does this guy have a Disney character tattooed on his calf?
Oh, shit.
The calf tattoo.
I wager everything that
yeah,
it's a
yes. That's a tough guy tattoo.
Yeah.
The Disney calf tat.
Because yeah.
then when you go in the summer and you're in those shorts, boy,
right.
people will know.
Oh, they know.
I'm just wondering if it's a Disney character on the calf or if it's the Dave Matthews fire dancer on the calf and then the Disney character like on the back maybe
right
or like a
his,
whole tableau. Yeah,
next to his Coco Pelli tattoo.
Right.
I bet he has – you know what he has? He probably has the badge for the downtown Disney fire
right.
tattooed all over his heart.
Right.
So because he's never off duty.
So anyways, this is the victim of our story because – after he put a charity fundraiser together at the park, with you know, his wife, who is also part of this social club. And the social club, the White Rabbits, the sort of Disney biker gang, the White Rabbits. By the way, these people like walk around in matching like biker jackets and stuff, and like,
or denim jackets. I feel like anyone who's gone to, I went to Disneyland recently at the beginning of the year, and I realized I actually didn't realize how organized these groups of people were. Not that I saw them specifically, but dressing up together thematically happens. So now know that some of these people are in gangs,
right?
Yeah,
very frightening.
Right. So they're all walking around in clusters, dressed in like matching, you know, biker outfits, but with Disney patches all over them. And when they run into each other, they'll usually trade pins, and like, it's kind of a harmless thing
because it's not an actual gang,
right?
So, is this like the best case scenario that could happen if you have a trust fund kid that goes nowhere, just have to spend their money somehow?
It's either that or become an Olympic skier,
right? Yeah, it's completely protected. It's like he could go out in the real world and get himself stabbed in a knife fight in Mexico, yeah. Or he could go like have a fake biker gang that is just really devoted to Tigger. And so after putting this charity fundraiser together, the White Rabbits, one of these social clubs, approached him and insisted that he pay them protection money.
That's fair. Pay him the damn money.
Yeah. In the weeks leading up to the fundraiser, Jacob Fight, or Fite, and four other members of a social club called the White Rabbits approached him and demanded he pay them $500 in protection money for the event he was trying to hold there. And he refused because, I don't know, he wanted to bring down the wrath of the White Rabbits. And he threatened to threatened to ruin him. And he started making T-shirts that called him and his wife a fraud, and like went on Disney Gang podcasts and like started talking shit about them, called them scammers and con artists.
I'm sorry, Disney Gang podcast?
Yeah.
These sets have their own podcast?
Thanks for tuning in. We are the official gang of Disneyland.
Disney Gang.
And they printed T-shirts with his face on it.
Yeah, you know, street justice.
Right. he is suing Disney and the White Rabbits gang for, you know, damages.
You know, it's funny. The whole time, you're kind of building the story up as if, like, some real gang should happen. But really, in the end, the protection money, who knows what was asked. And it ends with not broken legs, physical assault. It's like, you're a fraud, and I'm going to make T-shirts slandering you. So, I mean, a credit to them, because at least the gang problem hasn't gone out of control.
I wish it would have spiraled, because I don't think there's ever been a recorded story of malicious gang activity at Disneyland.
Oh, like, I wonder.
Fights between gangs.
Right.
I feel like the actual Disney cops would see the White Rabbits come over and start messing with the Tigger army, and then be like, all right, guys.
Right. The fake Disney.
They're like, hey, look at you. You guys are 35 plus, man. Acting like gang members.
But so they threatened Sarno and told him he would never be able to visit the park again, which is like probably the ultimate violence to do to him.
Yeah.
Threaten him that he can't go back to Disney. So I don't know.
I hope they shank the White Rabbits, and then he finally gets his Mickey Mouse teardrop tattoo underneath his eye.
Right. I'm sure there are tattoos involved.
Could you imagine someone rocking the three, like the Mickey Mouse head as a fucking teardrop tattoo?
I love it.
Like he caught a body at the park where he's like, yeah, homie, this is when I bodied that dude during Fantasmic. Right.
All right. Well, that is our show. David, it's been a pleasure having you, man. Where can people find you?
DavidHuntsberger.com. I have a podcast called The Space Cave. And then monthly, I do a variety show here in Los Angeles at the Copper Still called The Junk Show. There's usually some info about that on my Twitter or on my website. And on the Mother's Day show last year, this is before all the hoopla, my mom was the only mom there. Even though I had said, hey, bring your mom. There was like a 2-for-1 thing. Come on in. And my mom was the only mom. And so I was like, oh, this is kind of a bummer. If you want to get a mom hug on Mother's Day, feel free to hug my mom.
Wow.
And so as the show ended, there was like this small line of people. And I was saying goodbye to people. And I went to walk over to my mom. And someone was walking past me who had just hugged my mom. It was Chadwick Boseman. And I was like,
whoa,
hey, man.
Really?
He was like real nonchalant about it. And I was like, hey. You're a good actor. He's like, oh, thanks. I'm like, all right, see ya.
Love your mom.
All right, you mother hugger. Get the fuck out of here.
That's really cool, man.
I know. I should have asked him to bring a sample of Black Panther to show at a future. That would have been hilarious.
Hey, man, you owe me something now. Fuck my damn mom.
Shit isn't free.
Wow, your mom was... That's crazy that afterwards there was a line. It's like, I wonder the people who were in the crowd, like, you know what? I'm going to give them those mom hugs real quick. Because, you know, my mom was notoriously aloof.
Right. And you're doing a Mother's Day show again?
Yeah, it's the second Sunday of every month. So the four-year anniversary show's in April. The next one's on March 11th, if you happen to be in Los Angeles.
11.
Yeah, man. Yeah. We aim for that every year. Aim for it every... Amber really is the color of all of our energy, guys.
It really is. I don't know what that means. Miles, where can people find
you? You know what?
Fuck, man.
Whoa. Amber is the color of your energy. What was the question? Oh, me? Social media? Yes. Hi, Twitter and Instagram at Miles of Gray if you are so interested.
You can follow me at Jack_O'Brien on Twitter. You can follow us at Daily Zeitgeist on Twitter. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page. You can find us on our website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post each episode and our footnotes.
Footnote.
We link off to all the sources for the footnotes. Stuff we talked about today.
Boom.
Nice. You nailed it. And please rate and review us, or don't. We don't care. We're cool. And
No, we care. I care. Don't listen to him. Fine. I care,
I
and I need
too.
It. I don't sleep at night unless we have good ratings.
I do lose sleep, so please just give us good ratings. And that's going to do it for us for today. Miles, do you have any music you'd like us to wrap out on?
I mean, yes. We're going to go out on Amber by 311 because shout out to one of the greatest bands out of Omaha, Nebraska, which is another thing people probably don't realize. 311 is from Omaha. But yes, Amber.
In the fray.
Listen even to the harmonies in the chorus. Amber is the color of your energy.
All right, we will ride out on that, and we'll be back tomorrow because it is a daily podcast. Talk to you guys then. Bye.
Color of your